Пуст, а не подойдут ко мне. Do you understand what I just said? Unless you speak Russian, you would never be able to understand the words, let the little children come to me. Jesus wants to speak to all children in every land, and your church's Sunday school can help. For just $5 per book, your students can adopt an LHF mission project that will provide Bible storybooks to waiting children in other lands. Learn more at lhfmissions.org/children.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is a Rachel's Trivia Challenge. Yes. I love these. I love when Erin just totally wallops me at some of these answers. I still remember the day that she pulled postage stamp out of thin air for an answer. And I had no idea. That was a great one. Which one was that?
That was Valentine's.
That was Valentine's. Yep.
Yeah.
Still quite proud of you for that one. But today is not Valentine's because it's like middle of the summer. So, Rachel.
It's not middle of the summer.
Yes, it is fall. Is it fall?
It is the end of August. Yeah. It is the beginning of September. It is when everybody comes back to Sunday school.
Ah, yes. It's rally day season.
Rally day season.
Or Christian Education Sunday, I suppose some places call it, but yes.
I suppose. And we have talked about rally day previously. I will add a link in the show notes for our previous episode, Adventures in Lutheranism-ish Rally Day, which was hosted by our dear Bree back in the day.
Yes.
But since it is Sunday school startup season, whatever you want to call it, I wanted to talk about Sunday school.
Yes.
And since trivia is my love language, I thought, let's do a trivia challenge.
I love this for
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic.
Now, I do have to say, I've had a little trouble with this script more than usual. Normally, I'm like, yay, trivia challenge, the most fun part of my week. Unfortunately, it's not the most fun part of my week.
Hmm. Oh, no.
That's only because you're having so much other fun, Rachel.
I know what we're doing after this. And so that all of you listeners out there can just be aware, 2 weeks from now, you will get to hear our 5th anniversary episode, which is, well, we've cooked up something I think is going to be really fun. We're all kind of giggly about it.
Yeah.
But so that is 2 weeks from now for you, but it is approximately 1 hour from now for me. And so...
We all can't wait.
If it seems like I'm impatiently rushing through this trivia challenge, it's not because I don't love Sunday school, because I do.
Yes.
It's just because I'm so excited for what is coming afterwards. So apologies in advance for that. But that said, before we go back to the beginning of Sunday school in a moment, I'm curious. I want to ease into this retrospective with a look around us in the present tense and ask you both, what does your church do for Sunday school? Because I know there's actually a wide variety of approaches.
Our church has Sunday school for basically any age, especially starting this fall. Our deaconess is starting a new toddler class. So like 2 and under for like mamas, daddies, whoever wants to bring their littlest babies to a class for them. We have a lot of little kids in our church, so it kind of makes sense. So we have that as our youngest, and then we have classes all the way through like middle school. Usually kids that have been confirmed join us in adult Bible study. We have one adult Bible study, even though our room gets incredibly full. We keep it at one. We've tried a couple of times to split it and nobody ends up going to the second class. They all stay with pastor. So, I mean, I guess that's a good thing for pastor. Everyone loves his Bible studies. Hmm. So we have one adult Bible study class, and that's on Sunday mornings. And then Wednesday evenings, we have a second opportunity also. But I guess this is about Sunday, not Wednesday.
Oh, I mean, I'm interested.
Yeah. We have what the little kids call Wednesday school also, which is, I mean, it's a similar concept. We have a meal and then everybody has their own study opportunities, the littlest all the way up. This is when the kids have confirmation. They have it on Wednesday evenings. Mm. And then adult Bible study, there's a Bible study class that covers generally something topical, or just one of the other pastors in our congregation will lead that. And this is, you know, vicar leads Bible study or confirmation. And so that's just another opportunity. It's modeled pretty much the same way, though.
Okay, cool. So
we have something for everyone.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. So we have one Bible study. Most of the time we have one Bible study for adults. At different times of the year, there will be something separate. For example, there might be a new members class that's happening at the same time as adult Bible study on Sunday morning. So that might run simultaneously. Sometimes we have the youth in with the adults, and sometimes we have the youth doing their own class. Confirmation is usually its own thing. The kids who are in confirmation, which is more than one grade, they're doing their own thing on Sunday mornings. And then for the younger kids, right now we have some odd gaps. So we have like a bolus of kids, but then there's like a gap. Mm. And so we tend to group them a little more loosely. There definitely isn't a one grade per class sort of thing. It's more of a loose grouping that they do stuff that is, you know, as they say, age and stage appropriate. We also have, right now we have a number of little kids. So there's stuff for them. And then there are some, really it's more for the parents, because they've, for a while we had with like the parents for the really little ones would sometimes be in with the adult Bible study, but they often felt like they were going to and from and having to step away. So they decided that they would have, it's not even a structured thing, but it's sort of a gathering of parents with the small kids to talk about the readings, to sort of prep themselves for what they might or might not be able to catch during the service.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of time together on that while their kids then are sort of, you know, playing around them and demanding attention and that sort of thing. So it's not as structured, it sounds like, as Sarah's, but like the whole Sunday morning thing isn't as structured, but it is fairly structured. I mean, we have a plan for it, and we're just, you know, more accommodating the actual kids that we have, mm-hmm. as we plan how that looks. So,
well, that all also sounds very good. I mean, yay for Christian education.
Uh-huh.
I know at our church, and we are just starting up in a little bit here from where I sit. From where you sit, listeners, we have already started up. It's this weird time vortex thing that
time
happens
when we record.
Time doesn't exist. But I'm excited because, you know, new community, new church, new pastor for that new church. And we're sort of figuring it out as we go along. But I just know that there will be Bible-centered classes for young elementary and middle schoolers. There will be actually a youth Bible study for the high schoolers, and I think some of the young college students will jump in on that. I think they're going to be covering apologetics topics in adult Bible class. I'm like, yeah, this sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, very excited for Sunday school. And that, of course, made me wonder, where did we get this idea of Sunday school? As we wrap up the equivalent of our, you know how that moment where at the end of coffee hour, there starts to be this like breakup of chit chat while people settle in. Oftentimes, if you have coffee hour before Bible class, as everyone finds their seat and pulls out their Bibles and let's go, that's what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with hopefully an easy question, because there are multiple right answers.
Oh,
so good luck.
Okay.
We'll find out.
All right.
This can sometimes be surprisingly tricky.
Grab your coffee, take your seats, people. We're beginning now. Question one. Who first established the principle of Christian education for young people?
Martin Luther.
Oh, yeah, that's a good quiz.
First?
Jesus.
Yes, thank you. I would take Jesus. I would also accept Moses, Abraham, or even Adam.
Mm-hmm.
if you look at our Christian church as a continuation of the Old Testament church as well.
Right. You were asking for Bible people, not like Reformed. Right. Yes.
Who are historical. Let's be clear here.
Right. Yes. Right.
Jesus is as historical as Martin Luther.
Oh, yes.
But yes, as we talked about during our confirmation party planning episode, link in the show notes, catechesis for young people and new believers has been a key feature of Christian life since the earliest days of the church. Jesus said, let the little children come to me, and the early church took him very seriously. But of course, this trivia challenge isn't about Christian education generally. It is about the institution known as Sunday school.
Okay.
So we're going to move on to the next question.
All right.
All right. This is multiple choice. Oh, I don't want to make you work too hard. Question two. Where and when do most scholars agree that the first Sunday school, as we know it, well, as we call it, Sunday school began? Was it A, 16th century Italy, B, 17th century Germany, C, 18th century England, or D, 19th century America?
D. I didn't think, I just felt.
You just felt it? I'm going to go with C.
Give that woman a gold star.
What? Wow. I didn't even feel it.
Sarah's right. Sarah, you might want to take some probiotics for that gut because it's leading you wrong today.
I have lots of coffee going on. This might inhibit my judgment right now. I actually have coffee right here. Nice.
Delicious. All right. So yeah, I would have accepted actually 16th century Italy because some people date the start of Sunday schools in Europe back to the Catholic Church's Confraternity of Christian Doctrine founded in the 16th century in Italy. But however, I think the more classic answer is 18th century England.
Oh, you know what my brain was referring to? I think it was referring to an article maybe in the Lutheran Witness about Sunday school in America, which would not have been a global thing. So that's where that came from.
Okay. So yes, it started in about the 1780s, 1750s, 1780s, depending on which person you want to credit, where Robert Raikes, editor of the Gloucester Journal, started one.
Okay.
Yes. So Sunday school starts. May I ask you, what subject or subjects made up the essential curriculum for these early Sunday schools? Question three. What did the earliest Sunday schools teach?
The Bible.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the English equivalent of the catechism. What is that? Whatever it is. You know what
Anglican
I'm talking
one?
About.
Yes.
Yeah, that.
I do. And, you know, I'll give you partial credit for that answer. Partial credit for both answers. But
is
the
it
core
like
curriculum.
Reading and writing, is that what?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, literacy. Yeah.
And reading, I know, well, writing, ciphering, and yes, Bible and catechism.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but I don't want to spoil something that you may get to eventually, so never mind.
Okay, so that leads to our next question. Still on these early Sunday schools. What made them different from other schools of the time?
They were free. That's my guess.
Yeah, that would do. There's a more obvious answer.
They were Christian? Religious?
No, all the
they
schools
were for
pretty
everybody?
Much religious at that point.
More obvious answer.
Yeah.
We don't always get the obvious answers.
No, I'll just give it to you. The answer is they were on Sunday. That was pretty much the main difference between Sunday schools and
grammar. Dirty looks right now.
Dirty looks.
Okay. So it's essentially the same, just it's on Sunday.
Yes.
Okay.
Because at that time, every school taught.
Yeah.
Basic Christian doctrine and the Bible.
That's true.
Yes. So here is a little excerpt from, and I really love this. I'll link to it in the show notes. I know I keep saying that, but these trivia challenges, this is what we do.
A lot of links.
There's a wonderful 1961 doctoral thesis from Concordia Seminary called The Historical Development of the Sunday School Movement in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I've not had time to read the whole thing, but everything I have read has been really interesting. And this whole dissertation is available online. So yes, if you're interested in this, read deeply and then you can quiz me.
Oh boy.
But the author of this dissertation, Martin Hanschke, he says, the Sunday school in its present connotation went back to the days of Robert Raikes, English businessman and editor of the Gloucester Journal. It was Robert Raikes who popularized mass instruction in the Word of God under the name Sunday school. Originally interested in prison reform and ministering to the families of criminals, he was brought into direct contact with the slums of Gloucester. Dismayed by the lack of education and the irreverence of these urchin children of criminals, in the year 1780, Mr. Raikes hired four women who conducted private schools for reading and writing and made instructions for them to instruct these children on Sundays in the basic tools of education and utilize as subject matter not only the Catechism of the Anglican Church, there you go, Aaron, but also and especially the Bible. Now, they were on Sundays simply because what's the other thing that's happening round about this time in European history?
The Industrial Revolution?
Yes.
Children working in factories during the week?
Yeah. Yes. It's really hard to learn to read and write when you're working 13 to 18 hours a day in a factory or a coal mine.
Yep.
And so Sunday being the one day that you could count on all the kids being off work, that was when they put the Sunday school. So let me ask, this would be question number five. True or false? Pastors were super excited for Sunday school programs to take off.
Judging by your tone, I'm going to say false.
I think you're right.
Oh, Rachel, work on your impartiality. And that would be great.
So, but yes. Why specifically?
You're right. Why specifically? Well, there were several reasons, and we'll get to those in a little bit here. Ooh, but
okay.
All right.
The simple fact is that, well, it was an extra church thing. And okay, so here's another quote from Martin Hanschke here. And I think this story is kind of hilarious. And this is talking about the introduction of Sunday schools into America. He writes, again in America, because of the involvement of lay men and lay women, that's one reason, and the danger of doctrinal laxity, the church's opposition was pronounced. Incensed pastors drove out indignantly the small Sunday schools that had been started in their churches and forced them to meet in private homes. For instance, in Norwich Town, Connecticut, a young Sunday school teacher who had been trained by Divy Bethune in New York City reported that a pastor shook his ivory-headed cane angrily at the children and shouted, "You imps of Satan doing the devil's work, I'll have you set in the street."
Wow. That feels very inappropriate for a few reasons.
But I think the impression given was that Sunday schools were competing with church for people's time and attention, that these Sunday school teachers, under the guise of good intentions and biblical instructions, were really, you know, opportunists grabbing the one day of the week they could be sure to get kids and, you know, co-opting it for this other purpose of literacy education. Now, of course, as Lutherans, we don't see any, we have never seen any problem with those two things going together.
Right.
But if you're encouraging kids to go to Sunday school instead of church, that's a problem.
Yeah, we would have a problem with that.
We would have a problem with that, yeah.
All right. So we've been talking so far about Sunday school as a Protestant phenomenon. And really, from the beginning, you know, those Italian classes aside, Sunday school has largely been a Protestant phenomenon. If you talk to Catholic or Orthodox faithful attendees of their churches, they may or may not think of Sunday school as a regular part of their life.
Yeah.
This is a very Protestant thing.
Okay.
It was, as I'm sure you may have heard, a rather late addition to the Lutheran way of doing things. This is not new for us. We've talked about this before. There are at least three reasons. Can you name any one reason why Lutherans were late to the Sunday school party?
Because Luther taught that parents should be doing this in the home anyway.
He had the small catechism designed to be taught by parents to their children.
That is one. Yes. Ding, 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 ding. Points all around. That is one of the reasons that, you know, Luther and his catechism strictly charges as the head of his house shall teach mm-hmm. his household.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason is we love our day schools.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say we should go out of our way to have an hour of Sunday school on Sunday when we'd really rather just have the kids for, like, I don't know, 4 to 7 hours every weekday for mm-hmm. them to be getting
mm-hmm. yep.
the same instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you could. I would also have accepted the answer, Lutherans don't like change. And this was a new thing.
Fair point.
One more quote from this wonderful Martin Hanschke dissertation. And I'm having trouble reading these a little bit because I copied them from a PDF document that is really antiquated. Mm. And the formatting is really weird in my case. Mm. So if any of the words seem a little off, that's why. But he, in his review of the state of things at the beginning, he writes, a local St. Louis pastor, Paul Koenig, stated the difficulties he encountered when in 1915 he attempted to institute the Sunday school at Holy Cross Lutheran Church. Objections were raised by the faculty of the Christian Elementary School and provided basic reasons which were elaborated further in this investigation. Reason one, it may hurt the day school. Reason two, the children don't go to church if they go to Sunday school. Reason three, they don't learn anything worthwhile anyway.
Wow. The vitriol for Sunday school.
You know.
Well,
depending on the church.
Here, I'm betting they didn't start out with like a real solid curriculum.
No.
They were probably winging it.
Yeah.
Versus the schools, which did have, I'm guessing at that point, a very established curriculum. Mm-hmm. And yeah. No, I can sort of see this. I can sort of see this.
Mm-hmm. There's one other fourth reason why we did not necessarily jump onto the Protestant Sunday school bandwagon.
Hmm.
So we'll come to question number 7. Which came first, Sunday school or the children's message as a church phenomenon?
Oh, I would say Sunday school, but now I'm questioning everything.
Same. I'm just going to say children's
on the bandwagon. Then...
Oh, shoot. I did it again, didn't I?
Your face gave it away.
Got to turn the video off for these recordings.
I have a terrible, terrible poker face, you guys.
Okay, but if it is a children's message, I really need to know why, because that is very surprising. But I don't know. Is that actually the answer?
Well, it's no. The thing is, like,
yes and no. Come on.
Yeah. No, that is the answer. That's the answer I was going for. Mm. But they wouldn't have called it a children's message.
Okay.
Okay.
Because we in the Lutheran Church had long had established what is in German referred to as the Christenlehre, the Christenlehre tradition,
mm-hmm.
the instruction of Christians. It was a notable feature, and this is an article in Christian Culture mm-hmm. by Pastor Ryan Leslie. He says, the Christenlehre was a notable feature in Lutheran Missouri Synod congregations, especially in the German-speaking era of the 19th and first half of the 20th centuries. It was essentially a catechism lesson where the children would sit in the front pews and would be called on to stand up and answer questions by the pastor. If the children did not know the answers, the pastor would also call on adults.
Oh, you don't know that? Let's ask one of the adults to help you.
Does
understand.
Your parent know?
I know. Hot seat. Wow. The intent of the Christenlehre was that children would not forget the important doctrines and catechism's truths which they had learned, especially after confirmation. The Christenlehre usually took place in the sanctuary after the regular morning worship, or during Sunday afternoon, or later at certain times, it did take place during the service. So
that's interesting.
Because we already had this tradition of pastors sitting the young people and everybody down to review the catechism. It's like, well, why would we need Sunday school?
Interesting.
However, the Christenlehre, as Pastor Leslie says, was generally replaced by Sunday schools after World War II as a means of teaching children. Now, of course, this was in German. We were moving to English. That's one factor that caused us to switch from this Christenlehre to Sunday schools. But what other major movement finally got Lutherans to start Sunday schools? And the same movement, ironically, nearly killed all the original Sunday grammar schools. So it was, got Lutherans to do Sunday school and made the other Sunday schools change their entire strategy.
We adapt it right as everyone else is like, bam, we're done. Like the Lutherans are like, now's the time.
It's not like fully switching over to English, is it?
Nope. There was something else. That was probably
earlier, wasn't it?
Now, if you will remember, you can find the answer glaring at you from our previous book club book, Saints of Whistle Grow.
That's what I'm trying to remember. So it's the public schools, right?
Yeah.
Like the launching of public schools.
Yep.
Yep.
Everywhere.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, free public compulsory education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It made the idea of a Sunday grammar school obsolete.
Yeah.
Because these kids aren't allowed to work in factories anymore anyway, nor are they allowed to skip school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. But it also created some massive, well, let's just say it began to hollow out the Lutheran educational system because it's really hard to compete with free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so for the first time, we had a lot of churches where the majority of their kids were in public schools mm-hmm. and not getting, you know, biblical and Lutheran teaching through right. their Christian day schools.
Yeah.
And so you have this final reluctant, well, okay, I guess we really should do this mentality. So not until, it depends on around the time of World War I actually is where you mm-hmm. really see this public education movement start to make Sunday school make sense for us.
Yeah.
And I've got an interesting chart. Maybe I just threw some numbers from the LCMS Christian Encyclopedia. By the way, how did I not know this was a thing until today? I've done so many research projects for this podcast and everything. Uh-huh. And there's this wonderful website out there, the Christian Encyclopedia, with so much data, most of it slightly out of date at this point.
Yeah.
But for historical research, yay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I took the figures for the number of congregations and the number of schools in the LCMS beginning in 1850 and running through 1970.
Okay.
And for the first, until about 1910, the congregation and the school line run nearly in tandem.
Hmm.
There are a few more congregations than there are schools, but they're pretty close. When the Synod first recorded these numbers in 1850, there were 41 congregations and 41 schools.
Yeah.
Briefly, in 1870, there were 214 congregations and 226 schools. I don't know how that worked.
Hmm. Wow. Oh,
that is unexpected.
We were gung-ho about our education.
We really were.
We still are, but like, if you had a church, you also had a school. That was just like a given fact. Yeah. Or maybe two schools or three.
Maybe.
Apparently.
In 1910, we had 2,736 congregations and 2,130 schools.
Yeah.
Still holding pretty close. But then we start to see the numbers of congregations continues to grow until about 1970 when it kind of leveled off. But the schools sort of follow their own flat line to the point where in 1970 we had 7,233 congregations and 1,215 schools.
Wow.
And that number of schools was down by 200 from the decade before.
Hmm. Yeah, that's drastic.
So Sunday school, we may have dragged our feet getting to it, but when we realized, oh, this is the practical solution to make up for these other factors that are going on in the lives of our families, then we definitely, definitely got on board with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course, question 9, no LCMS bandwagon can truly be said to be rolling on down the road until CPH jumps on board.
Yes.
So, when did Concordia first begin publishing Sunday school curriculum? Hint, the year ends in 0. And I just gave you a whole lot of data that should help you get close.
What? In
1910. Who said 1910? I'm not looking at you. All right, perfect.
I finally got it right.
Yes. That was the year in which Concordia started publishing the Concordia Bläschen für die Kinder.
Ah.
Concordia Leaflets for Children.
In German.
Auf Deutsch, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until the 1920s that they switched, or later in the decade. Let's just say World War I might have had something to do with that.
Yeah.
That they switched to English.
Portals of Prayer made a pretty significant switch, too.
Yeah. But
most publications were making that switch at that time.
So these were monthly leaflets containing Sunday school lessons. And then as now, they included a Bible reading or story, some discussion questions, memory work, perhaps a catechism lesson, a prayer. And honestly, Sunday school format really hasn't changed that much ever since then. We're still doing this most of the time. Of course, there may be some add-ons like crafts and coloring pages and videos and songs, you know, that are designed to help make the lessons a little bit easier to digest for fidgety young people. And that brings me to something that's dear to my heart.
Oh.
Speaking of add-ons, question 10. What 1950s technology made a huge splash in Sunday school pedagogy and continues to be used in some lucky classrooms to this day?
The flannelgraph?
Yes. Yes. Wendy, yes, ma'am.
Yes.
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 I'm not smiling like so big right
technology
now.
Technology's a bit of a stretch, but okay, yes, absolutely. The flannelgraph.
I love the flannelgraph.
I know. I still have a soft spot in my heart for flannelgraphs. Oh. If I find one somewhere tucked away in a cupboard in a church, I will definitely pull it out and play with it for a while.
Do we need to explain what flannelgraphs are to our younger listeners?
Probably. So a flannelgraph is a board. Well, let me pull open here. I've got it. The Wikipedia actually has a bit of a stub on the flannelgraph. Here we go. Flannelgraph, also called flannel board or flannelgram, is a storytelling system that uses a board covered with flannel fabric, usually resting on an easel. So it's got like flannel with a backdrop painted on it, like, you know, like a temple scene or a pasture or, you know, like what people imagine Bethlehem would look like. And then you've got cutouts, and it could be paper cutouts, but with like Velcro on it. But more often I find just like fabric cutouts or felt.
Yeah.
Of characters and objects. You can just place them on the board and move them around as the story unfolds. And it just like sort of sticks on the board. And you've got these beautiful illustrations of like Mary or Moses or like sheep and goats or whatever that you can just sort of like stick up on the board and move them around as you're telling your story. And the great thing about this, even though it was used for a time in like regular educational settings, in the United States, flannelgraph has been very long associated with Sunday school students in Christian, especially evangelical churches.
Yeah.
Like this is kind of our thing. We grabbed onto the flannelgraph and we've held onto it. In some places, we are still holding onto it. So I love this. I love analog, touchy-feely kind of like storytelling aids. And this is the ultimate one, in my opinion.
It's true. I remember it being magical because they were still barely using it, I think, when I was like three or four in my church. I remember it anyway. I remember it in our in something. But it's like magic. You just have a thing and it just sticks. It's beautiful. I mean, this is like pre-internet days.
Yeah. And these were like high quality illustrations, too.
Yeah.
They were beautiful, like better than Barbie's, in my opinion. So if you
flannelgraph
find
a, better than Barbie,
if you find a flannelgraph set somewhere in your church, pull it out and like see if the kids of today find these as magical as I did. If they are totally meh about it, then I'm sorry, you know, negate my
your
5-star review.
Have ruined it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I suspect that they will be as magical for future generations as they were for all of us. So other innovations include the rise of youth groups and adult Bible studies. Like adult Bible studies, those started after Sunday school as something for the grown-ups to do while the kids were in Sunday school.
Oh my. Like,
well, the kids have to be in these classes. I guess a little biblical education wouldn't hurt us either.
That's right.
Children's Church and VBS, of course, these also came along after Sunday school. And we've talked about both of these previously.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we haven't talked about Children's Church. Maybe we should.
Hmm.
And then, of course, other innovations for other reasons. So we finally made it back to the present and have to ask a hard question. Question 11, is Sunday school attendance rising or falling in the 21st century?
Falling.
In general, I would say falling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a hard question, not because it was hard to answer, just because it's hard to say out loud.
Hard to hear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that holds true, of course, for church attendance generally. Mm-hmm. An article from churchleaders.com lays it out there. Families that used to attend 3 out of 4 weeks now attend twice a month.
Mm.
Families that used to attend twice a month now attend once a month or even less, which, of course, is really hard to build a Sunday school program around. But churches are adapting. Sunday school was an adaptation, and we are continuing to adapt. Have you, question 12, this is your essay question.
Oh.
What innovations have you either heard of or can imagine churches embracing in the post-COVID apocalyptic landscape of congregational life?
So I don't know that it's necessarily, I've heard of it before. I don't think it was post-COVID, but one that I really enjoy that my church does is during the summers, we do multi-generational, intergenerational Sunday school where we just are all together from the little kids all the way up to the adults doing Sunday school together. And when it's done well, like there is stuff that's for all ages to be participating. Now, that's a lot of work and that's a lot of effort to pull off well. However, it is really pretty cool to be at a table with, you know, that many different generations talking about something and being able to have everybody contribute and hear and learn from each other. So, yeah. I like that. I don't think I would want it. Honestly, I don't think I'd want it for all year round, but I do really enjoy it when we do it. It's nice for the summer. We do it periodically. A couple other times of the year, we'll have like just like a one-off intergenerational Sunday school, but I especially enjoy it for our summers.
I think that's awesome. And I have heard of churches doing multi-generational Sunday school all year round. Because I mean, oftentimes,
as a smaller group, it would make sense. Like, because it's hard to find that many teachers. And when you have such a small group of kids, it's hard. You're sort of like, okay, it's just two kids in there. So that's like a lot of pressure to.
There's a kindergartner and a fifth grader. What are we going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's hard. Yeah. Oh, it's my
Sarah?
Turn, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you seen any interesting little innovations that people are trying to adjust to the new world we live in?
I mean, I've seen a lot more video content that's kind of Sunday school related that I don't think is necessarily taking the place of Sunday school. It's more of like an accompanying message for your week and like stuff on YouTube that you can watch with your kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that's, I've seen some of that from a lot of churches that have been doing a lot more video content. So that's cool. I mean, in our church, I think having midweek options is good for people who don't necessarily want to do stuff on Sunday mornings. Because people work.
Yeah.
So it may be hard on Sunday morning. Having like full age range available midweek is really nice.
Yeah.
And the new class that we have for like babies.
Mm, yeah.
That is new for us and we'll see how it goes. But I mean, that's something that we haven't done before. But when if you happen to have a church that has a lot of under 2-year-olds, like generally you don't drop them off into a class,
right.
But this is something what parents and babies can be in a class if they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of two innovations that I've seen in different churches in the last couple of years that I was like, oh, yeah, good for you, adjusting to reality.
Hmm.
And one was a church that they were really struggling not only to get families to be at Sunday school every week, but to get enough teachers.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing. Sunday school teachers are volunteer and sometimes hard to come by.
Yep.
So they switched to a once a month Sunday school.
Hmm.
And every time they have it, it's sort of a little bit of a longer program, but they make a really big splash about it.
Hmm.
Like, you only have to come to Sunday school once a month. And when you do, we're going to throw all our resources into making sure that this one event is mm-hmm. worth your time,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which I thought was an interesting adaptation.
Yeah.
The other thing I've seen that was really, really interesting and fun was a once monthly class for parents of Sunday school age kids.
Mm-hmm.
That most of the time we'd be an adult Bible class, but once a month we'd have coffee and we'd talk through some issue related to raising kids in the faith.
Hmm. Oh.
Like intentionally equipping parents to do mm-hmm. that Martin Luther thing and be that mm-hmm. head of the household.
Yeah.
Talk through how do you and sort of everyone throw your strategies and resources and up right. there and compare notes and figure out how are we tackling specific challenges related to raising our kids in the faith. And yeah. I found that really helpful. And I'd never seen anything quite like that before. But this making sure that Christian education was happening in the home and that parents were feeling equipped and encouraged to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exciting things happening. I love it when the church comes together to try to come up with solutions to a problem that seems like an obstacle, but may yeah. or may not be.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are headed down the home stretch of this. Just a couple more questions. Hang in there. Right. Got a couple of true and false ones.
Mm. Okay.
Question 13, true or false? Sunday school is essential to the life of the church.
Mm, false.
False.
Yeah.
You can't.
I mean, as we've seen today, and this is, what's that?
I said, you can't fool us.
I know. Word and sacrament. Is essential yes. to the life of the church.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Question 14. True or false? Catechizing young people is essential to the life of the church.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
That's the thing I think I took away from this research journey I've been on for the last few days. And that is realizing that this core task of raising young people to know Jesus, to love the word and sacraments, to be a part of this Christian church. Like, this is something that has to happen.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Sunday school as we know it started with a newspaper editor trying to help factory working slum children learn to read, write, and know the Bible. And it was relatively recent.
Mm-hmm.
At that time and in that place, it seemed like a great, great way to solve this problem of how mm-hmm. do we help urchins become mature Christians? But who knows how we will answer that question in the future.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last question.
All right.
This whole catechizing young people thing, whose job is it? We got some multiple choices here. A, pastor. B, parents. C, DCEs and youth people. D, every Christian.
D.
Yeah, let's go with D.
I like that answer.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's important, this is me getting on my soapbox here, for us to remember, and especially when, as inevitably is going to happen sometime this year, there is a plea goes out for Sunday school teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That it is all of our job.
Mm.
If you are a member of Christ Church, it is your job to help make sure that this gets done, whether you have kids in the program or not,
mm-hmm.
that we're all in this together. The verse that came to my mind as I was thinking through this is, why did I not write down the reference for this? It's in the Psalm. Google it. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so.
That's Psalm 107. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Wow.
I'm impressed. You obviously have been to Sunday school, young lady.
I did an LWL presentation on Psalm 107, so that psalm is ingrained in my brain.
Okay.
That was the theme of the Atlantic District LWL District Convention this year.
Well, so you just reinforced another point to make with regard to Sunday school. You never graduate from Sunday school.
No.
Yeah.
That we are always learning more. We are always going deeper mm-hmm. in. But yes, let the redeemed of the Lord say so. We are all the redeemed of the Lord. And we are all called upon to share the faith with each other and especially with the young people among us. And so however you do that at your church, God bless you in that work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is good work.
It is.
And that, I think, is all I got.
Yay! This was a fun great. One! Was. I mean, they're all fun, but yeah. Still.
Yeah.
It is great.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe that was how Sunday school started. I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, now you know.
Now we know. And ladies, we want to know how many of these you know, so you can join our conversation in our Facebook group, and I will also... I mean, if you're listening to this, you already know the answers, but I'm going to post them on Instagram anyway. See how many you can get right as opposed to all the rest of our followers on Instagram also. So follow us there, Facebook, Lutheran Ladies Lounge, and also at Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Instagram. You can find all of our episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I can't wait for Sunday school to start.
Ah!
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.
This is why we love flannel graphs. We don't have to wait for the page to load.
Uh-huh. Right?
Uh-huh.